How you doing, baseball fans? This is Ed Lucasen at Yankee Stadium, Old Timers Day. And I have to say, a longtime friend of mine, becoming an old timer, Yogi Berra. Thanks, Yogi, for taking out the time.
Okay, Rick.
Yogi,
when's your golf tournament?
My
Don't
golf
forget to get my shoes, too.
You will get shoes. And the golf
when baseball broadcaster Ed Lucas said he was a longtime friend of the late Yogi Berra, he meant it. Over more than six decades, Lucas became close with many of baseball's greats. Friendships between writers and ballplayers aren't common, but in Ed, players saw someone who had struggled as hard as they had, if not harder, to get to where he was. Ed Lucas and his son Chris tell Ed's story in their own words.
Up until 1958, there was three New York baseball teams, the New York Giants, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and the New York Yankees. My father was, he worked nights, but when we were able to watch baseball together, I would have the radio on, he would have the TV on with another game, and then we would switch back and forth to see what's going on. So we would follow all three teams. I came home from school on October the 3rd, 1951, to watch the playoffs between the Brooklyn Dodgers and the New York Giants. The Giants hadn't won the pennant since 1937, something like that. So I came home, the Giants were losing, my father was very upset. Bobby Thompson hit a home run off of Ralph Branca. My father went crazy, yelling out the windows and pulled the dishes out of the closet to make dinner, and he dropped them. So I just said to him, I have my baseball glove, I'm going out. And I was a left-handed pitcher. Took my glasses off because I felt I could see better without them. And I threw a pitch, and a line drive came back and hit me between the eyes. And that was the last thing I ever saw. I have what they call a detached retina. I was completely in the dark. When we would go to New York and I would see these blind people begging, and I vowed that I would never, never do that. My mother wrote letters to the manager of the New York Giants, Leo DeRocher, and she wrote to him saying that maybe he could have someone send me an autograph or something just to cheer me up. And she was surprised to receive a letter from Leo saying that, I want you to bring young Ed over to the Polo Grounds. We'll give him a day. So on June 14th, 1952, I went to the Polo Grounds, and I went into the clubhouse and sat in Leo DeRocher's chair, and he came in, and I said, Mr. DeRocher, will I be going out to see the ballplayers on the field? He said, no, sir. My heart dropped. He said, you're my guest, and they have to come here and see you. And if they don't, they'll hear from me. And before I knew it, every one of those ballplayers stopped walking into his office and brought in little bottles of Coke. And it was a day I'll never forget. It gave me the impetus to go on. In those days, the ballplayers had to work. They weren't making millions of dollars as they are today. Phil Rizzuto, who was a shortstop for the New York Yankees and had won the MVP in the American League, he was in a clothing store as a greeter. My mother went over and spoke to him. He came over and met me, and before I know it, he called me up and he said, what are you doing? I said, nothing. He said, I'm going to be over in a half hour and take you for a ride. We went out and he would just take me for a ride. Then later on, he would come to high school, the New York Institute for the Blind, and he was very excited when I got accepted into Seton Hall University. He would, you know, have me over at the stadium doing interviews for the radio station at Seton Hall WSOU.
We have with us now, I guess the only way to describe him is the greatest ball player in baseball today and since 1951, Mickey Mantle. How are you, Mick?
Well, I'm not feeling too good today. I've got a little virus I came up with yesterday, and I don't think I'm going to play today either.
Well, Mickey, through the years you've been playing.
One of the people at the Polo Grounds said to me, Ed, you're always talking about interviewing the players. I said, yes. He said, bring your tape recorder over. And my uncle, he carried the big Pentron tape recorder, not the small ones that you can have in your pocket today, but this was, he had to carry it in two arms. And they had to plug it in the dugout. And so I did an interview with Willie Mays in the last game of the season, the Polo Grounds, before they left. And I had never met him before. And he came over and he sat on the bench and he sat there like, you know, this is my friend. And all of a sudden, I hear somebody walking back and forth on the wooden floor in the dugout. And I heard them say, when's this young kid going to get out of here? He said, I got to get a photo for the AP before the game. And I thought, gee, I may never be able to talk to Mays again. So I just kept on talking. I didn't worry about the AP guy.
This is Pee Wee Reese. If you want the inside story from the baseball world, listen to Ed Lucas, Around the Bases, over WSOU.
Because nobody else would hire me. You know, I would let them know that I was blind. And right away, well, how can a blind person follow baseball? What can he do? I have the radio on, and I have an earpiece on, and I'm listening to the game, but I can visualize the field. When he says hit the shortstop, I can see where the ball is being hit in my mind's eye, and or fly ball to center, whatever it may be. After a while, I can hear where the ball is being hit. I can't tell you how, but many of the ball players marvel at the fact that I could tell them, hey, that ball was hit the left field, or that ball was hit the shortstop, or whatever. I got married and had two children, Ed and Chris. And my wife, she wasn't too happy because I wasn't making the kind of money that her brother was were making. And we did buy a house, but she wasn't happy enough with it. And one day I came home from work and she said, I'm leaving. I said, what about the boys? She said, you can have them, and walked away.
I am Christopher Lucas. I'm actually the son of Ed Lucas. You hear people ask someone who grew up in poverty, and they always say to them, what was it like being poor? And the most common response you hear is, we didn't know we were poor. Same thing. I didn't know that my dad was disabled, that we were missing out on anything, because you know, we were having this amazing life and doing all these amazing things with him. We'd be driving over there to go to the game and, say, listening to Billy Joel on the radio. And during school that day, they'd be talking about President Nixon. And we'd get to the ballpark and who'd be sitting at the table with us for dinner but Billy Joel and Richard Nixon. You know, at the time, it was not as common as it is today to have a single-parent family. So I guess around the time I was 9, 10, 11 years old, I started realizing that there was a piece sort of missing there. And that just coincided with the time when my mother decided to come back and sue my dad for custody.
The judge said, Mr. Lucas, he said, either you give your two boys to their mother and a new husband, or I will put them in separate foster homes. He said, now you make the choice. So, of course, I would never want them to be put in the foster home, so I said, I'll give them to their mother.
I was 10 years old when the first ruling came down, and we found out that we had to leave my father after that was the only life I had known, and suddenly being ripped away from him. And to think about it, you know, it's still hard to remember those days, but a lot of people would have given up.
First, I got a new lawyer. He didn't give me much hope. He said the odds of a blind person winning custody of their children is very, very slim. Phil Zudo testified for me. He was a nervous wreck. He said, I've never been in court before in my life, Lucas. But September 25th, 1980, I was granted custody of my boys.
Where else would we go? We went to Yankee Stadium. It was Reggie Jackson hit a home run that night, and Goose Gossage was another guy that he's in the Hall of Fame now. He testified for my father. He gave a deposition. So all these guys, when we got there, they had heard already. They'd been on the road when the verdict came down. And as soon as we walked into the clubhouse, it became a party. It became everybody coming over to my dad, congratulating me and my brother. It was, if you're going to celebrate, that's the way to do it in the Yankees clubhouse.
Oh, it was great, just that my friends were all hugging me and congratulating me, and that, you know, they were supporting me all the way, not only in the custody thing, but also in baseball and being a reporter. They respected me at that time as a reporter and allowed me to interview them and give me private interviews.
Even as an adult, there's not a day in my life where I let myself say, oh boy, forget it, you're behind the eight ball, you should get... I just look at my father and I say... Oh, look at all he's gone through. How can I possibly ever say, oh, no, that's it, throw in the towel? His story is everyone's story. Every single person in life is going to face an obstacle or face a challenge. And if he can get through it, then you can get through it, too.
I can tell all stories about Yogi Berra, Phil Rizzuto, Mickey Mantle, George Steinbrenner. Good stories. I don't try to knock anybody. Baseball took my sight, but also gave me a life.
Ed Lucas finally did land a paying job in broadcasting, a few of them. He won an Emmy in 2009 for his work with the New York Yankees Yes Network, and he's been inducted into the New Jersey Sports Writers Association Hall of Fame. Ed and Christopher Lucas have collaborated on a book called Seeing Home, The Ed Lucas Story. Our story was produced by Karen Given.